everybody. You are listening to my dad on the Handgun World Podcast. Why does he carry a gun? Because he can't carry a cop.
Hi folks, Bob Main here with another episode of the Handgun World Podcast. This is episode number 343, and the reason I carry a gun is because I can't carry a cop. Welcome to a practical show done by a practical guy like me that does not come from law enforcement, military, or gunsmithing backgrounds or anything like that. Just a dude that takes my Second Amendment rights seriously, and I hope you do too. I've got a mixed bag of topics again this week. You know, a couple of weeks ago I addressed some voicemails. Last week I didn't have a show because I was really busy. Took a trip out to North Carolina to do some training with my company, some sales training. Hey, I got to tell you, I went through some excellent sales training. You know, I've been in selling almost 30 years now, and I went through a terrific training program that was a company that was hired by my employer. And I tell you what, I learned something last week. I learned that you're never too old or never too experienced to learn. And I, you know, I thought I had pretty much seen everything in selling or learned every way to do something in selling. And you know what? I learned some more. And, you know, sales is a real profession. I know some of you out there listening might not like salespeople too much. And you know, when it comes to salespeople, we're pretty much right up there with politicians and lawyers sometimes. People don't like us. But a good salesperson you will like. Somebody that knows what they're doing, somebody that knows how to do it without being offensive, somebody that knows how to properly conduct themselves and also represent their product. Even if you're not interested in their product or service, you'll probably like and respect them as a salesperson if they are good. And that's what I've tried to do my entire career. But I learned that you always have something to learn. I always have something to learn. So I hope that you are listening to this show realizing that even when it comes to guns and firearms or staying prepared, that you have something to learn. Always. When your mind is closed, that's when I think you enter the danger zone. Seriously. You know, I mean, people are either going to be in their comfort zone or their danger zone. That's it. There's very little in between. And people are in their comfort zone when they don't know something, or when they think they know it all and they don't. Now, I have a question to ask you that listening to this. How many of you know somebody who thinks they know it all and they really don't? You know somebody like that? And they're probably some of the most irritating people, are they not? Oh, man, you talk about frustrating. And the room was, we had a pretty small group. We only had six people in the training that I attended, but they were all pretty seasoned sales reps that worked for our company. And every single one of them walked out of there realizing that, hey, we can always learn something. Never too old, never too experienced. So thank you for, hopefully you caught up last week. Hopefully you had a chance to catch up on past episodes. I can tell by the downloads and I can tell by some of the feedback that I get from some folks that not everybody is caught up. At the time that I'm dictating this podcast, it's early November. And I bet you some of you are still listening to shows back in October and September. So hopefully you've had a chance to catch up or at least get a little bit closer to some of the more current shows, because I took a week off last week and didn't put out an episode. But similar to last week, I'm going to address some listener comments and feedback. I'm going to do something rare. I'm going to talk about some emails. I did get some pretty good emails recently. And I can't address every single email. Wow, you wouldn't believe how many emails I get regarding my show and regarding this topic and everything. That's all I would ever do, is if I just addressed emails. That's all I would ever do, and there'd be no other topics or interviews or anything else that I can bring you. But I decided that this week there were some that they might go back a few weeks, but they're very, very good emails. And so I want you to, I'm gonna read portions of those emails to you. I'm not going to read them word by word. That's boring. You know, that's boring. listening. You ever do that? You ever listen to somebody just read something word for word? It's boring. So I'm going to paraphrase. Let's get to a voicemail, though, first. Somebody called in a pretty good voicemail. I'll let you know right now, I love getting voicemails. The number is 210-646-1727. That's 210-646-1727. Or you can go to handgunworld.com and you can click the call me button at handgunworld.com and it'll hook up your mobile phone with my Google voicemail service that way. But let's get to the first voicemail.
Hey, Bob. I'm Tom from Minneapolis, Minnesota, and I love listening to your programs. Your programs are awesome. I mean, you're a breath of fresh air. The purpose of my phone call is, I want to know, I have my conceal and carry permit, up here in Minnesota, and I want to know, you get the different holsters, the Black Mambas and all this type of different holsters, but, I'm 58 years old. I got some extra weight on me. 5'9". I used to weigh 265. Went down to about 190, but now my weight's back up to about 230. So, kind of wide in the hips and stuff, and a big belly and a big gut, and I'm not comfortable carrying a sidearm around my hip because of the flab on my side. So, I wonder what kind of shoulder holster would you recommend? And, you know, maybe other guys like me too that kind of got this flab on the side that hangs over our belt. And it doesn't feel comfortable for me to wear something off to the side. If you can recommend a side holster that guys like me, a little extra weight on the sides and the hips and the belly hanging over the flap on the side, and maybe a shoulder holster or something like that, please inform me and the rest of the listeners to your podcast. I'm sure I'm not the only one that has this problem. Thanks, Bob, and we'll listen to your answer soon on one of your upcoming programs. Thanks, Bob. Bye-bye.
Well, Tom from Minnesota, thanks for calling in the voicemail. I'm going to say I don't have a lot of experience with shoulder holsters. I don't mind telling you when I don't have much experience with something, and I'm not going to make something up just to give out an answer. I don't believe in that. That's not a good service to you, the listener. Galco seems to make decent shoulder holsters. Shoulder carry is not a method that I recommend. If you're in Tom's position where you got a little bit of an extra tactical shelf and it's a little uncomfortable, maybe not practical, to carry a gun on the belt, let me suggest some things other than a shoulder holster. I mean, shoulder carry might be okay, but seems to me like it might be a little bit too hard to access your gun. I don't know. You don't want to make it more difficult to access your pistol, but if it's the only way that you can carry it, check into Galco. And, you know, if somebody else has an idea on a really good shoulder holster for Tom, let me know. Send me an email or call in the voicemail, 210-646-1727. Call into the voicemail if you have a good shoulder holster idea for Tom in Minnesota, or send me an email or whatever. And, of course, you know, you should check Facebook, facebook.com/handgunworldpodcast. I start a thread for every show on Facebook, and you can also put a Facebook message up there at the Handgun World Podcast Facebook message. You can put a message up there on shoulder holsters. Tom, if you don't already follow me on Facebook, go to the Handgun World Podcast on Facebook and like that page and follow, and perhaps a listener will be putting some more information and maybe even some pictures on Facebook. I'm also Handgun World at Twitter. Maybe you might want to consider downsizing the gun to make it a little bit more comfortable. I'd much rather see you carry on your strong side hip or appendix carry. It doesn't sound like maybe you could get away too easily with appendix carry, Tom. But I would much rather see you possibly downsize the gun or try a real comfortable holster. Have you tried a real comfy inside the waistband? I mean, even outside the waistband holster. Have you tried like the Cobra from Concealment Solutions? A real comfortable outside the waistband or Sidewinder. Outside the waistband holster from Concealment Solutions. A-Holster makes good products as well. You know, have you tried that? Have you tried some of the really good outside the waistband holsters? There seems to be a lot of comfortable ones. I'm a real big believer in the Cobra holster. I'm right now wearing a Concealment Solutions Cobra, and I'm wearing my Smith & Wesson M&P Shield while I drive. That's kind of been like my new driving gun now. I like the Shield. I like the Shield as a concealed carry pistol because it does hold 9 rounds with the 8-round magazine in it. and extremely quality made firearm, decent trigger. You know, I've said all kinds of good things about the Smith & Wesson Shield, and I like it. It's kind of like my new driving gun, and I can also carry it appendix style real easily, and sometimes I do that. I carry it appendix style, and I'll use a Concealment Solutions ASP 2.1 ASP, appendix specific platform 2.1 by Concealment Solutions. But there are plenty of them. I know I talk about Jason's stuff a lot, not because he's a sponsor, but just because I really like his holsters, and I use them, and I use them a lot. But, Tom, I would suggest before moving to shoulder carry, perhaps experience or experiment is what I meant to say. Perhaps experiment with some other outside the waistband, both inside and outside the waistband, strong side hip carry. Glad to hear that at one time you were down to 190, and maybe it was easier for you carrying a gun that way. Folks, ladies and gentlemen, you know, I'm going to say this, and I'm going to say this as delicately as possible, because I don't mean to be demeaning to anybody. I don't. That's not my style. Part of defending ourselves is not just learning how to use a gun or be able to draw it and put rounds on target in less than a second and a half. Although that's nice. If you can do that, that's good. Part of it is also being in decent condition to be able to do the things necessary. You know, one of the best things that you can do when you are in a violent situation, if you can, is run. Yeah, and you might be saying, well, come on, Bob, don't be such a little wimp. Run? No, stay and fight. Really? Seriously, stay and fight? If you can get out of the situation, get out of the situation. Don't be a macho man. Get out of the situation. If you can avoid getting hurt, get out of there. But sometimes people don't have the physical ability to do that. Stay in decent physical condition. Do whatever you have to do. It is so incredibly important. Being in good physical condition, having good footwear. You know, I really try very hard these days not to wear any kind of shoes that I can't move quickly in and run in. And ladies, I'm talking to you. You know, forget the really super long high heels if you want to be able to defend yourself. I mean, I know a lot of you women say, oh, I'll kick him with my heel, right? They're sharp. I can be effective with it. Eh, you know what? That might not be such a great idea. Men and women, have footwear that you can run in. Have footwear that you can maneuver in easily. Be in good enough physical shape to be able to get out of the way, to bust off the X, and to get going and move. You may never even draw your gun. Sometimes removing yourself from the situation is the best thing. And even if Tom finds a holster, a shoulder holster, or any kind of a holster, which I hope he does, you need to be able to do things like create distance, do things like move out of the way, move quickly. Movement is your friend. Movement and distance in any kind of a violent encounter is going to be your friend. Movement and distance is going to be your friend. That's going to be the key. But I'm not going to start recommending shoulder holsters to Tom because I don't know which ones to recommend. And you know what, Tom? If that's your only way to carry a gun on your body, then shoulder carry, look into what Galco has, or stay tuned to this show because some listeners might either call in voicemails or they'll talk about, or they'll send me emails which will talk about shoulder carry and give you some good recommendations. All right, so with that said, thanks for the voicemail, Tom. I appreciate that. Let me just go ahead and play a quick sound effect or something like that, and I'll be back with a couple of emails.
An Australian law enforcement officer called their gun registration, quote, an elaborate system of arithmetic with no tangible aim. They also called its crime control use a fallacy. New Zealand police call their gun registration system useless. Canadian registration has cost 1,600% more than originally projected, and a top Canadian cop said it does nothing to take one illegal gun off the street. And in Germany, some people estimate that upwards of 80% of all guns there are still not registered. So why do some senators, and some presidents for that matter, think that it will work in America? Arm yourself with facts to strip the gun control industry bare. Visit gunfacts.info and get your free copy of Gun Facts. Called Indispensable by Cam Edwards of NRA News, Gun Facts is your rapid reference guide to debunking gun control myths and shaming politicians into obedience. www.gunfacts.info.
Okay, this first email that I want to talk about comes from a gentleman named John out in Washington, and he took the class that Ben and I taught, the very first one that we taught at Fort Discovery out there with Glenn Tate. We taught Beyond Concealed Carry out there the one day, which we did in August of, it was last August, August of 2014. So John, thanks for sending in this email. John sent me a copy of an interesting article from NewYorker.com. Now, the New Yorker is considered anti-gun. It's considered anti-gun and liberal. But what's really interesting, and this is an article about school violence and things like that, it doesn't take an anti-gun approach. And I thought that was pretty good. I'm going to link to the article in the show notes. It's called Thresholds of Violence. And it's pretty good. It's good to see a liberal media outlet like NewYorker.com. It's good to see that they don't automatically blame the gun, but they blame something else that you might find interesting that you might not have ever thought of before. Let me share parts of John's email. First, he starts by saying that he highly recommends that I read this article, which I did. He said the article is one of the most insightful treatments of gun violence in our schools. And basically, the synopsis that the author of the article, again, the article is called Thresholds of Violence. The synopsis is like this. Basically, gun attacks in schools by teenage white males is kind of like a riot in slow motion. Now, think about that. I never thought of that before. But this article, it lays out a lot of facts of cases, and it delves into the minds and the behavior of a lot of these school shooters and even some of the movie shooters. And if you go back, if you think about it, it goes all the way back to 1999. Basically, Mr. Klebold at Columbine, they basically started it. I mean, it's kind of like this big riot. It's like a riot that breaks out, but in slow motion. Do it over a long period of time, from 1999 to 2014. You know, just stretch that baby out years and years and years. Some of them are copycat attacks. Some of them, if you look at the behavior of some of these people, we can't just completely blame this on mental illness, because some of these people were not all that mentally ill. Some were, yes, some were gravely mentally ill. But some of it was also kind of like the way a riot breaks out. You know, each person in a riot has a different threshold for violence. And sometimes one person in a riot will do something small, and then another person will do something a little bit more, and then the next person will do something a little bit more and a little bit more violent, and a little more and a little more and a little more. And it starts with just small little pockets of violence, and then it grows into this big riot. Yeah, have you ever noticed that? And that's how riots sometimes start. Well, these disturbed people may not necessarily be mentally disturbed, like may not always have psychosis or mental illness or depression, even though some of them do. And we have to fix that problem as well. Please don't get me wrong. I'm not saying that we don't have to fix that problem. But if you think about it, and you got to read about some of these people. John Ledoux is one of them. You got to read about him in the article, Thresholds of Violence. You know, it started with the folks at Columbine, with the young boys that came in and did that, and, you know, that awful tragedy, and these guys kind of pretty much started a lot of it. And if you think about it, it's not that there wasn't school violence before Columbine. There was. But we sure have had a lot of it lately. And since 1999, we've had more of it from 99 to 2015, the present day, than we did for 30 or 40 years before that. Why? or even 50 years before that. Why? You have to think about something that this article doesn't really directly mention, but I'm going to bring it up. Yes, people, unfortunately, their threshold for violence is far higher than it used to be. Now, why is that? Some people would say, well, ask, well, why is that? Well, several reasons. Some people want to be copycats. Some people just want to get the notoriety. Okay? And that's why they do some of these things, because they see the guys at Columbine do it. They see the guy at the movie theater in Aurora, Colorado do it. They see the guy at Sandy Hook do it. And I'm trying not to mention these names of these people. And they see the guy at the church in South Carolina do it. And they figure, well, I can do it too then. And some of them are not cowards. Some of them are not shooting themselves as soon as police arrive. So, you might be tempted to say, oh, they're just a bunch of dirtbag cowards. Well, hold on a second. Hold on a second. A lot of times when a riot breaks out, there are people in the riot that never intend to do any violence. But once they start seeing their friends or people that they can identify with do things, then they decide to do something, and then the next person decides to do something, and it just builds and builds and builds. And pretty soon, once you got several people deciding to commit some kind of a violent act, and then all of a sudden now the riot's in full swing. You know, in Ferguson, Missouri, we saw some of that, where, you know, little pockets here and there all of a sudden turns out to be full-scale violence. And so these school shootings is kind of like a riot in slow motion. Right? Interesting concept. Think about that. Now, I mentioned earlier, people have a greater threshold for violence than they used to. It seems like that, especially young people, especially teenagers, people in their early 20s. Now, I'm not going to say, well, they got to get off those violent video games. You know, I do think that to a small extent, violent video games do desensitize people to violence. But I'm not going to go so far to say that these violent video games are the root cause of violence. The violent video games are not a good thing. And I don't think it helps the situation at all. Especially when you have people that are predisposed to violence, or when you've got young people that find themselves, kind of like some rioters do in a riot situation. They're a little bit tense, they're a little bit worked up, you know, they got a little bit of a chip on their shoulder for some reason. They have an attitude, right? They've got a jaded attitude, and then all of a sudden they find themselves in this large group of people, and you got these little pockets of violence breaking out, and so they decide, well, okay, I think I'm just going to go ahead and do something too. A person that's on the edge like that, playing violent video games, watching violent movies, violent YouTube videos and things like that, it's not a good thing. But I'm not going to go so far as to start, like some people do, blaming everything on violent video games. And I've heard that out there, and that's just not accurate. Because there are a lot of people, plenty, hundreds of thousands, if not millions of people, who have played violent video games that are just fine. And there's no problem with them at all. The last few weeks I've been concluding my show with something I really like when I interviewed Paul Carlson up in Ohio after we did Beyond Concealed Carry class, Beyond Concealed Carry Enhanced in Ohio. When I interviewed Paul Carlson from the Safety Solutions Academy, he basically, you know, we ended the interview where he said, Bob, evil does not exist in the holster. It exists in the hearts of men. And isn't that true? I mean, think about it. Our threshold of violence is higher. Evil exists. And it's basically what you see is you see the forces of evil. And you see it unfold like a riot in slow motion. Yeah, that's what it is. It's one person that starts something. And then the next person feels they can do it too. And then the next person, and the next person, and the next person, and the next person. And sometimes these people who think about and act upon their violence, sometimes they are mentally disturbed and sometimes they're not, but sometimes they don't care. They don't care whether the other person that they're trying to follow or the other person that kind of enhanced their threshold of violence, they don't care that that person was mentally ill. They just see that it can be done and that they did it, and then somebody did it. And so they feel, well, I'm just going to go ahead and do it too then. Now, oftentimes you do find something off with these people, right? These people are not your normal, everyday teenage or young 20-somethings that are out there. You know, they're not these real righteous people out there. And I get that. We all know that. But let's just be careful not to just dismiss them as a bunch of rogue crackpots. All right, would you agree with me? And I've done that. And so I'm going to take some of that back, because oftentimes, you know, you find that in a riot situation, a lot of times police officers will find whenever the riot is cooled down, whenever it's calmed down and people, you know, when the riot's over and law enforcement has it under control, sometimes when they're interviewing people who were doing the rioting, doing the looting, committing some of the violent acts, they find that the people really never were in that situation for the specific purpose of causing violence and a riot. They weren't in that situation. They weren't there just to do that. They might have been there to protest. They might have been there to see what was going on. They might have been in the wrong place at the wrong time. But all of a sudden now they find themselves, their threshold for violence has increased because they see other people that they identify with doing things and doing these violent acts. And I think that's what we've seen with some of these people. I've seen that. I think we saw that with the guy at Virginia Tech. I think we saw that with the guy at Sandy Hook. I think we saw that with people that with young people that have decided. Now this, you know, this guy in Aurora, this guy was a nutbag. I mean, this guy was just mentally ill. The guy at the church in South Carolina, hatred in his heart. That's what it was. Hatred, racist in his heart. Evil exists, not in the holster, but in the heart of man. But if you think about it, it is, isn't it, so much kind of like a riot that plays itself out in slow motion? You know, each incident builds on the next one in the minds of individuals that before we had the internet, these people would otherwise be playing with chemistry sets in their basement, right? They'd be in their basement building weird stuff with their chemistry sets, not getting on the internet and figuring out all these ways that they can commit these violent acts. I mean, all these nuts are not the same, is what I'm trying to say. There's an evolution going on. It's kind of a scary evolution. And this article, this New Yorker article, is pretty accurate with that. You know, the article even goes on to talk about how this, what they call this riot in slow motion, beginning with Columbine, that the riot even becomes more and more self-referential, kind of more ritualized, more and more about the identification with the school shooting tradition. You know? Think about that. So, you know, I'm not going to get real psychoanalyst, you know, with this stuff, but it kind of makes sense. And because lately, and when I say lately, I mean the last 15 to 20 years, you know, we've had so much violent stuff going on. Everything from terrorist attacks to school shootings and things like that. It just seems like this is true when you think about it, right? One thing starts and then somebody tries to copy it and then somebody else does something else and somebody else says, well, hey, I can be a star too and I can do that kind of stuff. And it's just evil. It's just evil that starts to magnify itself. And it starts to multiply. Okay, starts multiplying like rats. And, you know, it just grows and grows and it grows. So, what's the fix? Well, there is only one fix. How do you stop a riot? By force. Okay? You have to allow the potential victims of this riot in slow motion to be able to arm themselves and stop what's going on by force. And once these people, these evil people, and I don't care whether they're mentally disturbed or they're not, when they make a decision to hurt innocent people that are defenseless, that's evil. Hey, I'll just call it what it is, all right? I'm not going to be politically correct. The only thing that is going to stop it is not a new gun law. And even addressing the mental health crisis, which we definitely need to address in this country, that's not going to completely stop it. It's giving people the ability to defend themselves and to stop it right when it begins to happen. And because it is like a spreading riot, and we don't know where it's going to happen next, people have to be aware. People have to be armed. People have to know how to use their arms. People have to be well trained. They have to be willing to defend themselves. And for gosh sakes, their government needs to get out of the way and allow them to stop this riot in slow motion. I hope you agree on that, because that really is the essence of what's going on here. John in Washington, thanks very much for sending me that email. Thanks for pointing me to that article. I will put a link to it in the show notes. You can read it. You tell me what you think of it. I would like to hear your feedback. Quick pause and I'll be right back.
Oh, God, please help me. He's got a knife.
You have reached the 911 emergency service. All operators are please stay on the line for the next available emergency operator. You have reached the 911 emergency service. All operators are busy. Please stay on the
911 operator, what's your emergency, please? Hello? Hello? Hello?
Last year in the United States, thousands and thousands of 911 calls went unanswered. And if you call from a cell phone, there's no way to pinpoint where you are. Yet politicians like Dianne Feinstein call for more gun control. We have one question. Why do these politicians have armed bodyguards? Can't they just call 911?
Okay, I'm going to get to another email shortly. I want to say at this point that I went ahead and signed up for Tom Givens's 2-day combative pistol class in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. And I know that there's one other listener that is going to be going there. So that's going to be pretty good. March 19th and 20th, I'll give Tom a little bit of promo here, because I've heard so many good things about him, and I'm thinking about taking it. So you'll see me there if you're thinking about going over there, Baton Rouge, Louisiana, March 19th and 20th. And as I mentioned, I'm dedicating 2016 to becoming a better shooter and to becoming a better self-defense artist. I need to train myself. I need to learn. I'm not completely satisfied with my skill level. And in good conscience, I want to be able to teach people when I get back to instructing. I want to be able to teach people a whole lot more than what I am able to teach them now. And I think I'm going to not only improve myself, which is the most important thing, but be able to share more with others. I will be back into regular firearms instruction, most likely in 2017. I might take part as an instructor in one class next year, but until if and when that's finalized, I will keep that quiet for right now. The last chance you're going to be able to take a class with me doing some instruction is coming up real soon, like shortly after you hear this episode, November 21st and 22nd, Beyond Concealed Carry Advanced. We have quite a few people signed up for that, but is still a little bit of room left. Beyond Concealed Carry Advanced, the 21st and 22nd of November. Chaz Murray from the Road Gunner Podcast and Tracy Thronberg from KRT Training, and also was my guest, and also a Mag 40 instructor, They are both going to be teaching the first day, and I am going to be a student that first day. I think Ben Branham is going to be a student that day or most of the first day as well. I want to learn from them and find out how to become better shooters under their techniques as well. The second day on Sunday, by the way, the hours on Sunday are noon to 7. Noon to 7. So guess what? Because we're going to be out there on the range until 7 o'clock, there will be a little bit of low-light shooting. Just a little bit. So make sure you bring your flashlights, those of you who are signed up. Make sure you bring your flashlights or weapons-mounted lights and get ready to learn how to use them. Because for a little while, for about an hour to an hour and a half, there's going to be low-light or it'll be dark. So, you know, 80 to 85% of the class is going to be in daylight hours, but there will be that little bit of time on Sunday because the class goes from noon to 7 because those are the hours of the range, a place to shoot. So, November 21st and 22nd, you can get signed up for that at handgunworld.com. That's handgunworld.com. And John Payne from Suarez International is coming to San Antonio to do a rifle class, a carbine class. Any kind of rifle. It says M4 rifle gunfighting, but you can bring an AK. He'll show you how to run it. Or if you want to bring something else that's similar, it's best to bring a semi-automatic rifle to that. And again, I'm going to be a student at that one. Not going to be doing any teaching. But that's going to be, I believe it's May 14th and 15th, 2016. So I got that kind of planned out for the first part of the year. March, I'm going to take a class by Tom Gibbons. May, John Payne from Suarez International is coming over to San Antonio. And I'm going to be doing a lot of competition. Hopefully I can actually get started next month, in the month of December, or a little bit later this month in November. But hopefully I can get started with my new venture into IDPA CCP division. CCP, compact carry pistol, and maybe a little bit of USPSA and AASA. So between my... between the training that I'm going to take as a student next year and my competition, I hope to be able to pull the trigger a whole lot more and sharpen my defensive skills a whole lot more. All right. The next email that I want to share with you comes from Lawrence. And I made comments about some revolvers a few weeks back. And Lawrence sent me a pretty good email here about revolvers. And again, I'm not going to read it word for word, but I'll kind of paraphrase because I'm actually mostly doing this from memory. Yeah, because I am driving. I'm driving in the Handgun World mobile studio, and I'm being safe, and I want to be safe. And yes, it's possible to podcast from the road and be safe. As long as I keep my eyes on the road and keep my concentration on what I'm doing, I can multitask here. So obviously, I will not be looking at my phone to read this stuff word for word. But Lawrence said he had a Smith & Wesson 642, and he sold it. Then he got a, I believe he said he got a Smith & Wesson Model 438. Revolver, which is basically the same type of gun with a shrouded hammer. And he heard that I had talked about the Ruger LCR. According to Lawrence, you can't go wrong with either the Ruger LCR or the Smith & Wesson J-frames. Now, I've had a chance to dry fire both of them. I really like the triggers on the Ruger LCRs a lot better, but the triggers can be improved on the revolvers, especially on a Smith & Wesson 642. Lawrence says that the Ruger has better recoil control. And he said there's a lot of excitement on the upcoming Ruger LCR in 327 Magnum. And I mentioned that. And I tell you what, that's a really intriguing revolver, a 327. Because, you know, 327 Mag, it's got decent power. Now, you know how I feel about stopping power. You know, handgun rounds are... there's so much similarity between handgun rounds, but the 327 Mag falls into the decent category. You know, anything that's in the decent category, like a lot of your 9mm, a lot of your 38 specials, this 327 Magnum, of course we all know 357 Magnums and 40 calibers and 45 calibers, they fall into the decent category. And, you know, that round, that revolver holds six rounds. The Ruger LCR in 327. Six rounds. So I think that's pretty cool. So Lawrence brought that up, and he says he's got Pacmar Diamond Pro grips for his J-frame. Pacmar Diamond Pro. and he uses those for extended range sessions and as a winter carry, I guess, as his secondary handgun in the winter. Now, I'm not a real big fan of having to try to change grips on a gun. If I end up getting a revolver, I'm probably going to get something that's got... If it doesn't have grips that I like right out of the box, I'm going to find a set of grips and then just stick with it. Now, one of the things I don't like about the Ruger LCRs is I think their grips are way too big. Way too big for what I'm going to use them for. If I get a revolver, I'm going to use it mainly for pocket carry or as a backup. And if it's a pocket carry or it's a backup, I want it to be as small as possible. And I don't want big, fat grips. And one of the things, those Ruger grips seem like they might be kind of sticky inside of a pocket, just kind of based on the way they're made. And I don't really like that too much. So that's my thought on revolver grips. But Lawrence also says that, you know, most people would know how to just point and shoot with a revolver. And I'm sure that's the case, and I'm sure that's what needs to be done. Now, he says his office... Hold on one second. I got to pause here, and I'll be right back. Okay, sorry about that. Anyway, Lawrence was saying that his office or his employer, which he cares not to name, which I don't blame him, he says that they don't allow employees to carry, but that there are three authorized people that are armed at all times. And I think he said one of them was him and one of them was the IT director. And, of course, I don't want to be staring at my phone and trying to figure out who the other person was. But anyway, you know, hey, you know, if a business is not going to allow their employees to carry a gun for protection inside the building, at least ensuring that there are people on site that are armed all the time, that's a good thing. You know, so kudos to Lawrence's employer for doing that. At least they're doing something to provide for the protection of innocent employees who are working there that could come under attack because this business has decided basically to set up a gun-free zone where attacks are, we all know, far more likely to happen and give the bad guys far more leeway to do their evil acts. Because evil does reside in their heart and not in their holster. And, of course, they don't even use a holster, some of them. But you get the point. And so, Lawrence, thanks for sending me that info about revolvers. And thanks for sending me that email. If you want to email me, folks, the best thing to do is just email handgunworld@gmail.com. handgunworld@gmail.com. Okay, another email I want to talk about comes from a listener named Dave, and Dave was basically just asking me about, you know, small guns, small 1911s or small guns, and he likes safety. So he was basically asking me if I could recommend some guns, some smaller guns that have a thumb safety. Now, again, I, you know, trying to recommend a gun for somebody else that I don't know or have never seen shoot, it's a shot in the dark, no pun intended, but it's kind of like, it's a real crapshoot whether I'm going to be able to recommend the right thing or not, because everybody is different, everybody's skill level is different, hand size is different, tolerance for recoil is different, ability to train or willingness to train is different. I'll tell you, if you want a gun with a thumb safety that's small, you know what I mean, because you think you have to have a safety. I don't think you have to have a safety, but if you think you have to have a safety, nothing wrong with the Smith & Wesson M&P 9mm shield with a thumb safety. They make a version with a thumb safety it's the first shield I had. I don't particularly care for the thumb safety, but one thing I like about the thumb safety on the Smith & Wesson shield, if you've got a version with one, is it's pretty hard to engage. In other words, it's pretty hard to put that on safe. The likelihood of it going on safe when you don't want it to is slim. Possible, but slim. Now, there's a negative to that. The negative is it's not that easy to disengage either, which I think is a significant negative. It's not that easy to disengage. Some people say, well, I just leave the thumb safety off on my Smith & Wesson shield. I just leave it disengaged. and just use it as a point-and-shoot gun. That's fine in theory, but the reason why I jumped all over the chance to get a shield with no thumb safety once Smith & Wesson came out with them is because you always have to plan for the unexpected. You always have to plan for Murphy and the unexpected. And if you have one of those guns and you don't train to disengage the safety, what's going to happen when you go to use your gun? And even though it's a slim chance, it could happen. What's going to happen if that safety is engaged and you start pressing the trigger? You may have now lost a half a second or a second or even a second and a half. And that could mean the difference between life and death, folks. Am I going to the extreme? I don't know. Who knows? But you know what? I know I'm never going to have that problem with my Smith & Wesson shield with no thumb safety. I'm not going to have that problem of the safety being engaged when I don't want it to be. So that was one thing that I recommended to Dave. And I also suggested, I wasn't quite sure exactly what his budget was, but you know, Springfield makes a range officer 1911, and they make it. They make a compact version of the range officer, which is a pretty well-built gun. They make it 9mm and 45. And then also Springfield makes the EMP in 9mm. So those are a couple of small 1911s, either in 9mm. The EMP is only in 9mm, and I'm pretty sure the range officer is either in 9mm or 45. And one thing I like about the range officer is it's not as small as the EMP by Springfield, but it just seems to me like it is as good a gun as the EMP for a lot less money. Maybe slightly bigger. You know, you can put nice thin grip panels. I think it comes with nice thin grip panels on it already to make it thinner if you have small hands, and to make it a little bit easier to conceal, although 1911s generally are pretty easy to conceal anyway. But a Springfield range officer 1911 and 9mm. That looks like that might be a pretty cool gun. And, of course, SIG makes some pretty nice smaller 1911s. They also are coming out with I believe it's a SIG 225. It's coming out pretty soon. I'm pretty sure that's the model. And it's going to be a single-stack 9-8-round magazine pistol that is going to supposedly compete pretty well with the Glock 43 and the Smith & Wesson M&P Shield and the Springfield XDS 9mm. So SIG is jumping into the game. I'm pretty sure it's going to be a DASA gun, which means double action, single action. Your first trigger pull is double action, and every trigger pull after that till you're finished firing and decock it is single action. But anyway, Dave, thanks for the email, and kind of hard to recommend gun choices for people, but I do the best that I can, not knowing the person personally or how they can shoot. Okay, the next email and the final one that I want to cover in this episode comes from Al, who is out in Italy. Al is an Army dentist in the United States Army, and he's stationed out in Italy. And I had a chance to have dinner with Al, I think it was about a year and a half ago. He was in town doing some work with the Army in San Antonio, and we had a chance to meet. So, hey, Al, it's good to hear from you. Thanks again for joining me for dinner a while back. And thank you for your service to our country. I really appreciate it. You know, Veterans Day has just passed us, but I want to say a shout-out to all veterans, past and present. I love what you do. I'm thankful for what you do. It is because of people like you I'm able to do this podcast. I'm eternally grateful for the service that you have given to this country and for my freedoms to be able to do this podcast and carry a gun and all the many other freedoms that we enjoy. I salute veterans. I have many family members who are veterans, past veterans and present veterans. And ladies and gentlemen, thank you for what you do. And Alfred, that means you too. Serving the United States Army as a dentist. And he says that he doesn't get to go shooting very much, but the Beretta factory is close to him out there in Italy, and there's tours every once in a while, which that's cool. I would love to tour any gun manufacturing facility. I've never toured a gun manufacturing facility. That'd be kind of cool. Anyway, he said that when he gets back stateside, he hopes to start stocking up on ammo. Good, good. Way to go. That's good. He says he's most familiar with FMJ, with ball military ammo, because, yeah, that's what they have to have in the military. And he wants to know if I should do that or not, or if he should do that or not.
It was one of the worst mass murders committed by a single person. It happened down south. A lunatic killed 27 people, including his own mother, in a single pass. The killer used a six-shot revolver and a knife. Mass murderers find whatever tools they need, and those tools don't need to be sporting rifles or high-capacity clips. A slow, reloading revolver is all this fellow needed. Banning clips will not prevent a madman's massacre. But that doesn't matter to the gun control industry, who thinks inanimate objects are evil, but ignore the deranged people who misuse them. Arm yourself with facts to strip the gun control industry bare. Visit gunfacts.info and get your free copy of Gun Facts. Called Indispensable by Cam Edwards of NRA News, Gun Facts is your rapid reference guide to debunking gun control myths and shaming politicians into obedience. www.gunfacts.info.
Basically, he wants to know if he should stock up on military ball ammo and be using that for self-defense purposes, because that's what he's most familiar with, being in the Army. He wants to know if he should do that versus expensive hollow points. No, 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 Alfred, don't do that. No, no, no. Don't use a military ball for self-defense. You know, I mean, if you have to, get somebody over here in the United States to pick up some ammo for you and hold it. I don't believe that that's illegal. And if that's illegal, somebody, I don't think I've ever heard somebody buying some ammo and storing it and then giving away some ammo to a friend when they can. I don't know. That shouldn't be illegal. If it's illegal, well, boy, then I'm sorry that I suggested that and somebody correct me and set me straight. But, you know, Al, if that's what you got to do, it's not that expensive anymore right now. Hollow point is what I'm talking about. Hollow point ammo. You know, I mean, guys, you got a brother, sister, son, daughter, father, mother that could grab some hollow point ammo. Don't use ball ammo for self-defense. There's all kinds of reasons. Ball ammo can over-penetrate. Ball ammo generally doesn't have quite as much stopping power. And so, you know, it's actually, believe it or not, it can be, it, for those of you bleeding hearts out there that might be a little bit worried about the bad guy and what the ammo might do to the precious bad guy as he's trying to take your life, oh my God. Well, you know what? Hollow point ammo might actually be better for the bad guy, because it's got more stopping power and it's going to stop him quicker than you having to shoot him multiple times with ball ammo. Recently, Masad Ayoub from the Pro Arms podcast, and of course the one and only Masad Ayoub, he interviewed a police officer, and gosh, he was in Skokie, Illinois, and the police officer was talking about having to shoot multiple times in a shootout that he was involved in, and he was talking about why he got rid of his Glock 21 45 caliber, retired it. It sits in his safe as a safe queen, and he's gone to carrying a Glock 17, and he carries like over 100 rounds of ammunition on him. And, of course, a Glock 17 starts with 18 rounds. I can't remember which round that officer was using. I think it was Spear Gold dot hollow points. But, you know, here you have a police officer that had to fire that many times just to stop a bad guy using hollow points. Think about if you were using FMJ. I simply cannot believe that the military allows Full Metal Jacket, FMJ, military ball ammo, to be used for self-defense purposes. I mean, I know why they do it, but I think it's just a bad move. You know, it's not the same as using ball ammo in a .223 rifle. Or even a 7.62 by 39. Not the same. Not the same. Because handguns are anemic anyway. You make them even more anemic and more weak by loading them up with Full Metal Jacket ammo. So, Alfred, no, I would suggest that you figure out a way to budget. And even if all you have is just a couple boxes of hollow points and you carry that all the time, that's what you need to carry. Can't be all that expensive to get some good Spear Gold Dots or Federal HST or Corban DPX or Winchester PDX or some Barnes X 9mm rounds for your Beretta. And that's what you should carry. Save up and do that. I'm not going to recommend FMJ ball ammunition for defensive purposes in a handgun. Okay, folks, by the way, thank you so much for the emails. Please don't forget to join the Shooters Club and possibly win a gun. You know, you can do it for free as well. You don't have to be a member of the Shooters Club. You can make about a 45-second video, and you can send it over to me or to Ben Branham and explain to us, either ask us a question by video or explain to, you know, why you like our show or even dislike our show. We don't care. I mean, you know, hey, if you want to send us some negative feedback, that's fine. If, as long as it's well thought out and constructive and not just this, you're not just throwing up on us, then we'll take some constructive criticism. I always do, and Ben always does. So we're pretty good about that. But you can make a 45-second video, and you can send it to us, and you can get your name in for free that way. Or you can become a membership. You can become a member of our Shooters Club, and you can be entered twice. You're going to be given two numbers. I'm going to use random.org on Christmas Eve, December 24th. And random.org is going to select one number from either the Shooters Club members, who are going to have two numbers, or the people who entered for free. And guess what? Pretty cool. You're going to have a chance to win a Springfield XDS 9mm. I owned it for a couple of months, and Ben has had a chance to do, I think, a 100-round test or something like that with it. It's running great. It's got four or five magazines and a holster with it, and you could be the winner of that. We're also giving away five holsters from On Your Six Designs, onyoursixdesigns.com. Nick at On Your Six Designs has agreed to participate in that, so there's a holster giveaway for that. And Jason Christensen at Concealment Solutions just had a Veterans Day special. I did put it up on Facebook. I did not get a chance, Jason. I apologize because I didn't do a show last week. I didn't get a chance to get that Veterans Day special talked about. But, you know, I think this podcast has posted too late, I believe. But you can get 10% off if you're just a regular listener to this show by going to ConcealmentSolutions.com and using the promo code Handgun World. That's Handgun World. And I'm sure that Jason's probably going to be having some Christmas specials come up soon, so I'll have a chance to announce those for him. But become a member of our Shooters Club. You get great videos, 35 or 36 videos up there on how to be a better shooter. $8 a month or $75 for a one-year membership. After you've been a member for a year, you can renew for $50. It's pretty cool. Last but not least, ladies and gentlemen, please don't forget about my Amazon store. And Christmas, you're going to be buying a lot of stuff for Christmas, aren't you? Coming up real soon, if not already. Please use my Amazon store. Go to handgunworld.com. There's only three steps. If you would take these three steps, you'll help me out, and you don't even have to spend any extra money. How cool is that? Go to handgunworld.com, go to the Amazon store, and click the Amazon store link. Do that each time. If you just take those three steps, do that each time. Please don't save it into your browser. I heard that there could be some complications with that. So if you just go to handgunworld.com, click the Amazon store page, click the Amazon store link, and then make all your Amazon purchases on that session, then Amazon will take care of you. And it's a way that you can support this show without having to spend any extra money. Ladies and gentlemen, thanks for listening to another episode of the Handgun World Podcast. My name is Bob Main, and I carry a gun because I can't carry a cop. Remember, the loudest sound a shooter hears is a bang when he's expecting a click. Or a click when he's expecting a bang. Catch you next week. Shoot straight, shoot safe, and I'll talk to you later. Goodbye. If they back me up.